Make a better connection with your friends on Facebook. Use the hottest voice conferencing service around. Call from TalkShoe.com. That's Talk, like I'm doing now, and Shoe, as on your feet.com.
Recorded live.
Welcome to another exciting edition of WordPress Weekly, episode 15 for Friday, May 2nd, 2008. I am your host, Jeffro. I am the webmaster of Jeffro2.0.com, as well as a contributing writer for WebLawToolsCollection.com. WordPress Weekly is not affiliated with Automattic in any way, and if you would like to participate in today's show, you can either voice your opinion through the TalkShoe web client, or you can use Skype out, a landline, or a cell phone and dial 724-444-7444. The TalkCast ID number is 34224. You don't need a TalkShoe account to participate. Today's special guest is the one and only David Peralti. In my show notes here earlier in the week, I mentioned that he was owner of bloggingpro.com, but that doesn't seem to be the case anymore, and we'll get more info on that later on in the show. However, davidcubed.com would probably be considered Dave's home on the net. David has worked for Splash Press Media, is a contributing writer for the Blog Herald, and writes about WordPress-related topics on a regular basis, or at least he did on bloggingpro.com. And with me right now is David Peralti. David, how are you doing this evening?
Not too bad. Could be better, could be worse, but I'm definitely glad to be here.
All right. Hey, I'm glad to have you here, because I know from experience you always have something to say. Sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad, but you always have, you know, an opinion.
Yeah, that's been pretty much the case, and I think that's pretty much what I'm known for now. So kudos to all those that have built that brand for me, I guess.
And, you know, I first discovered you when I came across the WordPress podcast when you used to be a co-host with Charles Strickland. And I thought you two had a really dynamic relationship where Charles, in my opinion, would be the more positive guy and you would be the more outgoing, this is what I should think, this is wrong type of guy.
Yeah, well, you know, I've used WordPress for so very long that, you know, you fall in and out of love with it. And during my WordPress podcast days, it just seemed to make more sense to be the negative one, because Charles always had something good to say about it. And it was like, well, wait a second here, you know, Automattic can do wrong, or WordPress can do wrong. And here's what I think. And I enjoyed playing the devil's advocate, and I still do. So while I'm using WordPress for pretty much everything I do, I can definitely see its flaws sometimes, and I like to let other people know what I think of that.
All right, and for those wondering, there is some big news that you're probably going to drop a bomb. You're going to drop a bombshell on us during the show, but we're going to save that till the end because, you know, we need some suspense here in the show. We got to give people a reason to listen to the entire show. But I've got a list of questions here, and I've also got a list of questions that some users have submitted to me during the week here. And I just wanted to start off by asking you, how did bloggingpro.com begin? Now, I know you're not officially tied to bloggingpro.com anymore, but I think that's the one site that the majority of people know about in terms of the WordPress community.
Right. And I'm not actually even the original writer. John Hesch, who originally owned bloggingpro.com, wrote on it for about a year, I think, before he decided that he wanted to sell it and get out of there. And at the time, I was just kind of getting into this whole blogging thing. I didn't know if I was going to be any good at it or not. I thought it was rather interesting. And, you know, I was watching people like Michael Heilman talk about how great WordPress was. And then I was able to get a guest position for Darren Rouse while he was going on vacation, working on one of his laptop blogs. And that really got me into it. I just, you know, I thought blogging was the coolest thing in the world, and he was using WordPress, and it was just so easy to use, and I fell in love with it really quickly. And Jacob Goer, who owns Blogging Network, ended up buying Blogging Pro from John. And he tried his hat at writing on it for a while, but as much as he enjoyed the software, he saw it as a business tool, and he didn't really get into the community. He really didn't care about that aspect of it, to be honest. And So when he saw me work for Darren for a little while, and I basically profiled him on my personal blog a few times, asking him why he spent all this money on, because he was buying up sites left, right, and center. He bought like CSS Vault, Forever Geek, which were both Paul Scriven's properties, the person that runs Nine Rules. And so I was like, hey, what are you doing here? You're spending tons and tons of money, and you're trying to manage and write all these sites yourself? And he's like, well, do you want a job? And so that's how I got my start on Blogging Pro. And I would have started, let me look here. Geez. 2.5 years ago, almost 3 years ago, writing on Blogging Pro. I've been pretty much the only author since then.
I mentioned to you before the show began that I went over to bloggingpro.com and I was going to check the archives to see, you know, to go way back in time to check out what was covered. But, you know, I wasn't able to go back there because there didn't appear to be an archive template that was available for me to view the archive. The archive appeared blank. But what I wanted to know is, have you always blogged about WordPress, or did it become more and more just WordPress involved? Because you, bloggingpro.com, used to be one of the top websites to go to as far as WordPress news is concerned.
Right. And actually, when John first started it, it was about every blogging platform that was out there. Actually, he was highlighting things like Movable Type and Blogger more than WordPress. And when I came to join it, I really didn't know any other system. All I knew was the WordPress community. And before he ended up selling the blog, he was starting to get into the WordPress community. He was running Blogging Pro with it. And so it made sense for him to keep informed on the developments. And when I started writing for it, it made sense for me to keep informed on the developments because, you know, if you're running the software, you may as well keep up with what's going on. And the community kind of grew from there. I guess the biggest thing that we had was kind of, you know, the feature length posts where we went over the ins and outs or the issues that we've had with WordPress. More than just, let's say, the WordPress news. And it was definitely one of the early sites that talked about WordPress. And we were even in the WordPress dashboard for a long time. And the only reason we were removed from that was because when Jacob first bought the site, you know, no one knew which direction he was going to take it in, and so they didn't feel comfortable having it in there still.
That's funny because that was going to be my second question. I was going to ask, you know, I understand that you were once in the WordPress dashboard, but you were removed from it, but you just kind of answered the question as to why you were removed.
Yeah, it's always actually been kind of a sore spot with me because WordPress allows RSS feeds based on categories. And so why they wouldn't just take our WordPress posts and put them in the dashboard if they thought those were high enough quality, I never understood why that happened.
Did you ever manage to get a hold of Matt Mullenweg and talk to him yourself? And as far as what did the decision? Sorry, some of these words are hard to pronounce today. I got to drink more. But have you ever been able to talk to the big head honchos over at Automatic or WordPress to see if you can get Blogging Pro back into the dashboard? Or has there been any communication since?
Yeah, when it was first removed, we went and said, hey, you know, what's going on here? We'd still really like to be in the dashboard, and we think we provide a great service to the WordPress community. And the response at the time was, well, we'll see how the quality goes, and we'll reassess it later. And we contacted them a few times after that, but it was never reassessed. It was never dealt with, and we just kept on going as is. We didn't really worry about it too much. And, you know, we had... at points, it actually kind of felt like, well, why bother even covering WordPress? And so if you go back, you can actually, if you search for the post removed from WordPress dashboard from Blogging Pro, you can probably find the post. And if you go to the post just after that, you'll kind of see the WordPress coverage like just drop like a stone just because, you know, I kind of felt slighted. I kind of was like, hey, well, wait a second here. You know, I spent all this time getting to know all these people in the WordPress forums and, you know, like trying to hack the ins and outs of it. And I've been using WordPress since version 0.72. And, you know, so I really kind of felt that it was a personal jab, but Matt's a great guy and every dealing with him other than that has just been absolutely amazing. So, you know, I can't really fault him for wanting to make sure that the dashboard has the best things that it can have. And he didn't feel comfortable with Blogging Pro at that time because it was just sold. So.
Yeah. So, So you seem to have always had a hand in blogging networks, and I was just wondering if you can give me and the listeners a brief history lesson in the blogging networks you have participated in, minus the one you might be talking about later.
Like I said, my first start was writing as a guest poster for one of Darren Rouse's blogs, his laptops blog. And it was for his living room community, and it was only while he was gone on vacation. And after that, I was kind of looking to get a full-time blogging job, and I was kind of, you know, tossing my hat out there. And Darren was using a stats program that openly showed how many hits he was getting if you clicked on one of the images. It's like Sitemeter or something. So I actually had proof that during the time that I was guest blogging, I had increased the traffic for that month. Over 30%. So I used that kind of as my reference. And I went to a bunch of different blog networks, Weblogs Inc. and all the big names, and said, hey, you know, I really want to do this as a full-time gig. Does anyone have any jobs out there? And Darren was going to offer me a part-time job, but I was really looking for something full-time at the time because I was just finished up a contract doing computer operations, so backing up servers and whatnot. And so Jacob Gower offered me the job. I worked with Blogging Network. And while I was working with Blogging Network, I also was part of Fine Fools, which was a spin-off network for Paul Scrivens of Nine Rules, who wanted to kind of build his own blog network and do some interesting things. And for those of you out there that know the history of blogging, you might recognize the name David Krug. And his big claim to fame was on the Fine Fools network as the celebrity cowboy, where he kind of, you know, pissed everyone off and outed everyone. And eventually the Fine Fools network kind of disintegrated and went off in its own different ways. And Paul shut down some sites and sold some sites. And so I really stuck with Blogging Network, you know, throughout all of that Paul Scrivens Fine Fools stuff. And, you know, between those two things, I look back on that and it's like, man, if I'd taken the part-time job with Darren Rouse, I might have been one of the founding members of B5 Media. And if I'd stuck around with Paul Scrivens back when Fine Fools was a mess, I might have been one of the founding members, like not one of the founding members, but one of the early members of Nine Rules as well. And it's one of those things where you kind of kick yourself in the butt for opportunities that you didn't necessarily take or know about or have the foresight to see. And then in October of last year, Jacob basically came to me and said, you know, they were going to refocus more on services for bloggers rather than blogging. And in order to do that, they need to sell their biggest name blogs to try to really build up some capital to work on BlogFlux. And some of the blogs to go were Forever Geek and Blogging Pro, which I've contributed, you know, upwards of 10,000 posts towards. And I was really, really scared that I was going to lose touch with those posts, lose control over those posts. You know, some other corporation was going to monetize all that work, those years of work, and I wasn't going to see another dime of it. I wasn't going to be able to moderate comments, none of it. And luckily for me, SplashPress at the time said, hey, you know, well, we'll take you too. So I went along with the sites that I had contributed to the most, and you know, it was a really great fit, and I was really happy to stick with those blogs and, you know, continue trying to build them up.
And, you know, what you mentioned you were with SplashPress Media. You went along with Blogging Pro to SplashPress Media, and I understand that you were the – what was your correct title? Marketing? I just call you marketing guy, but what was your title over there in SplashPress?
I was the head of marketing at SplashPress Media, yeah.
So with that in mind, I was just wondering what your thoughts were on online advertising as it relates to blogging or blogging networks. I imagine you would have some sort of experience in that area.
Yeah, in SplashPress, I definitely got to build up a lot more experience in that. And I've also been building up a lot of experience in dealing with that in my own blogging and the work that I'm doing with the network that I've co-founded with Sarah Perez, Grand Effect. And I guess the biggest advice for anyone listening would be, don't be afraid of advertising. You know, if you really want to make a go of this stuff, don't be afraid of advertising. So many people are like, oh, well, if I add ads, I'll put off all my users. Go to any of the Weblog Inc. blogs, go to any of the Gawker blogs, go to johnchow.com. These guys are making huge bucks. John Chow is making $1,000 a day off of one site. And the only reason he's doing that is because he has so many visitors coming to his site, clicking on those high-profile advertisements. And don't be afraid of ads. It's so worthwhile to spend the time and effort on monetizing the work that you're doing. And it'll make you want to continue to do that work. And don't underestimate the value of social media either and person-to-person networking. It's two skills that I really didn't pick up early on in my career. And I've watched so many other people who are experts at social media and networking with other bloggers just pass me by in the whole blogging career. And definitely don't let that happen to yourself. You know, if you haven't learned what StumbleUpon and Reddit and Dig and Spin and all these other sites are, go and take a weekend and just try to figure them out and who are they for and what do they do and who are the big players. And it'll really benefit you in the long run.
Now, in terms of marketing and online advertising, were there any big deals that you were able to get to go through while you were the marketing guy at Splash Press? I mean, were there any big notable deals that maybe you could tell us about, or you know, maybe some of the difficulties as it relates to talking to other media networks as far as the advertising deals that would take place?
Yeah, I guess the biggest thing there would be that big companies don't care how many page views that you have. They don't care what niches you cover. You could be writing about, you know, HP printers and have 1 million page views a month, and you can go and contact HP and think that they're definitely going to advertise with you, and they won't. you really have to build a slow building up relationship with these people, and you really have to be open and honest. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, the first couple of times you contact them, they're going to like kind of, you know, snub you or raise their nose at you thinking they're too good to advertise on your site or that it's not going to fit or that it's not going to work or that's too much money. And I guess the funniest thing about that, I can't give out who or how much or anything, but we noticed that bigger companies like to see bigger numbers. And so when we started slapping on zeros on how much it would cost them to advertise on our sites, we started getting more yeses, and I always thought that was really, really strange. You know, we come here.
Really?
Yeah. You come and you're like, oh, it's only going to be this much. And they're like, no. You come back like 2 months later and you say, oh, it's going to be 10 times that amount. And they're like, okay, we'll consider it. Let's try a 1 month trial. And it blew us away time after time where they saw value because we placed more value on that advertising space.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to ask you. I was going to say that maybe it was a philosophical thing where your price was really high up there, and they figured, well, these guys are expensive. It must be valuable. It must be worth it. We'll go ahead and give you some yeses.
Yeah, and it worked, and it was just absolutely shocking the first couple times it happened because it's like, you know, I told Dave Jones, who's the advertising sales guy, oh, just, you know, send them back an email with a bigger number. And he's like, oh, well, if they didn't take the small one, they're not going to take the big one. And I'm like, well, you know what? The worst they can say is no. And so we were absolutely, like, thrilled and floored when some of them started saying yes. And more than one. It wasn't just a one company type thing. It was a few decent-sized companies that said yes. Most of Splash Press, though, definitely was trying to key in on the type of advertisements that wouldn't we picked companies that wouldn't necessarily make us a bunch of money sometimes, but that would work really well for our readership because we didn't want to have something like a Dodge Nitro advertisement on Blogging Pro because no one's ever going to click that. No value is ever going to happen, like be added for either the advertiser or the readers. So why waste our time and effort trying to build that relationship when it's never going to work out? WordPress theme developers, web hosts, and basically anything dealing kind of with that blogging arena, Flash developers and whatnot, they were really, really supportive of our efforts in trying to monetize the content because they saw a value in the Blog Herald and Blogging Pro and Forever Geek. So, like, we owe them a huge kudos. You know, we wouldn't have been able to continue to run the sites as easily or with as much passion if we didn't have the monetization behind us. That's the really hard thing about the blog network industry as a whole, is that people don't realize that It's not just content, right? We have to pay for a server guy. We have to pay for a marketing guy, an advertising guy. We have office administrators. Like, there's all this support staff that has to be built around these bloggers, and no one ever sees or hears about these people, but they still have to, you know, we still have to pay their salaries. So, you know, it's really lucky that so many people are in the place where they can actually do that kind of stuff right now, advertise on these sites.
So I know you're not the owner of B5 Media, and I know you're not the owner of Splash Press Media, but I'm kind of wondering what your thoughts are as to why these blog networks exist. Is it because they can't do it on their own? Individual bloggers just can't do it on their own anymore? They have to team up together in a network to accomplish a single goal? And if so, what is the goal of a blogging network? Is it to get the most traffic? Is it to make the most money? I mean, what is it?
Well, I guess the answer to those questions would be kind of different for each blog network. But from what I've learned, here are some quick generalizations. Blog networks were created to make money. Simple as that. They want to build up big brands that will either make them money of one of two ways, either through advertising and other payment models. So like how Darren Rose does his like six-figure blogger course and stuff like that. Blog networks like to build those courses because, you know, that's pretty big revenue, and you build the thing once and it continues to generate cash for you. The other way that blog networks make money is by cashing out. They eventually sell to someone else, just like, you know, just like AOL bought Weblogs Inc., just like blogs are sold and bought, like Bloggy Network sold some of their blogs to Splash Press Media. Cashing out is probably the biggest way that most of these networks will eventually make the money that they want to as a business. I think the reason that they exist is just because, you know, someone wants to make money, number one, and number two, everyone knew that newspapers and TV and radio wasn't really doing it anymore, and this blogging thing was starting to get big, but it was mostly just, you know, private journals and stuff like that, and people saw Google provide money for people who were using their advertising systems, and they went, hey, wait a second here, we can make a newspaper with Google AdSense on it that kind of continues to generate revenue, and we can have our own newspaper online. We don't have to worry about a printing press. We don't have to worry about broadcast advertising. We don't have to worry about, you know, paying huge fees to get on the TV stations. We can cheaply and easily distribute any content that we want online, and that really appealed to so many people, not only journalists, of course, but people outside the journalism industry were like, wow, this is such a cheap and easy way to connect to our readers and our users and build up a community. And I think that's why a lot of networks have done what they've done. I think that the big issue going forward is, you know, will these blog networks continue to grow and will they continue to do well online? And that's more unsure right now. I think the big thing will be, most of these blog networks are going to have to find someone with really, really deep pockets, because even with advertising, a lot of these sites are huge loss leaders. You have to spend way more money to continue to build them up than you get from advertising currently. And that's why, you know, the Weblogs Inc. deal was so brilliant for AOL, because they bought the community. They didn't have to spend all that time and effort and money and branding energy to build up a brand. They just bought it, and they had all these advertising partners that they could just throw ads on these new blogs that they bought, and boom, you know, they had a real business, where a lot of blog networks, they don't have a real advertising team, and you know, they're still trying to figure out how we're going to, you know, make a real business out of this. And I think a lot of them are going to fail, unfortunately. I think you're going to see more networks like Nine Rules and like Grand Effect, where you take established blogs that are already doing well and help them get to that next level.
Now, I believe it was Performance Scene. No, Dev Lounge. I believe it was devlounge.com. I believe there is a person who is the sole author of that blog who is writing excellent content. And then was it Splash Press Media? Someone purchased up Dev Lounge and purchased the author out of there. And I guess based on the post. In fact, it was a post you wrote, I think it was on Dev Lounge, about how the problem of investing in a blog, you purchase up the blog, and then If you can't invest the time and money into keeping the blog up to par or above par from what the previous owner did, then what you're essentially doing, I mean, within a matter of weeks, the value of the blog that you just purchased could just plummet.
Right. And I basically gave a reasonably round number of about 30%. You'll lose about 30% of your revenue, 30% of your traffic, 30% of your following, 30% of your RSS feeds. All of that stuff just disappears pretty much overnight if you don't really push really, really hard when you like first buy a blog.
And WP Designer. just saying. But,
yeah, and pretty much any blog, right? And, you know, it's one of those things where you really have to have a plan going into it. If you're going to purchase a blog, before you even spend the money, before the cash has even changed hands, you should at least have one post ready. Because as you're writing that first post, you will quickly realize if this is the blog that you should really be trying to buy or not. So just a little tip for those thinking about that kind of stuff.
So making money as a blogger. Based on your own experience, what are some of the ways that bloggers nowadays can make a buck or two or maybe three in today's world, of blogging? I have my own thoughts to this issue, but I'll let you go ahead with that first.
Right. I guess it kind of goes back to my history a little bit, but when I first started blogging, I was making around $1,750 a month. That's, you know, it's more than minimum wage, but it's not, you know, big salary or anything like that. And I was producing between 12 and 20 posts a day. Don't do that to yourself. Slave labor is not fun. I guess make sure that you value your time correctly. And if you're going to go into a blog network, definitely make sure that you negotiate your rates. Just because they say it's, you know, $3 a post or something ridiculous like that doesn't mean that they actually expect to pay that much. They're trying to see how little they can get away with. And your job as a writer is to negotiate. Never, never, never take the face value of what a blog network is willing to pay you. Even if they won't budge, you should always try to negotiate. When it comes
Not to interrupt you, which I just did, but that's along the same lines as what Laurel said on my show. I think it was 2 weeks ago when I asked her in regards to blogging for like the Blog Herald. She was telling me about how she sets her own price because that's how much she feels she's worth, and she doesn't budge from that price because that's her price and that's how valuable she thinks she is. And if someone doesn't want to pay for that, well, then obviously, you know, they don't want that. So I think what you're saying is, you know, be able to negotiate your worth and don't go for anything less.
Right, but at the same time, also keep in consideration that there's a balance that has to be played here, right? These companies that you're trying to join are trying to make sure that they make some sort of profit too. And if they're already running their blogs in a loss, adding a new writer at, let's say, twice the salary that they were expecting to pay just doesn't make good business sense. And it's not really going to make good employment sense for you because that blog is eventually going to run out of money, usually before it gets famous and makes a bunch of money, and you're out of a job. So you kind of have to be smart enough to consider the site that you're going to be writing on and how much traffic it has and what you kind of guesstimate how much money it's making and how much it has to pay out, and kind of try to make sure that you can kind of fit in there properly, because, you know, you don't go to a site that has 20 subscribers, let's say, and 100 page views and request $50 or $100 a post, because, you know, they're not going to be able to afford that for very long, for sure. And if they try to, usually they'll just run their business into the ground. And do you really want to work with someone who's going to run their business to the ground? So
because the way I look at it, you have your individual bloggers who are perhaps blogging for a while, writing for a while, and then they kind of decide, you know, maybe I can make money doing this. So generally, what's the first thing they do? They go and get a Google AdSense account, and they slap Google Ads onto their blog, and next thing you know, they realize nobody's clicking on their ads. They're only making a couple cents a day, and it's going to take them an eternity just to get to that first $100 payout by Google. So then, especially in the WordPress community, what do you see on almost every WordPress blog? 125 by 125 images advertising either premium themes or a theme club or some other sort of advertising, maybe a web hosting company. And
right.
I could see how that could make you a little bit of change, you know, maybe allow you to purchase a couple Happy Meals during the month. But as far as I'm concerned, it appears that unless you have a very unique voice or a very unique take on things, on whatever subject you happen to be writing about, it seems to me like the only chance a blogger has of getting above the noise that's out there in the blogosphere is to join a blogging network, because then there's actually, you know, a strength in numbers, and
yeah.
It's a team of people kind of all working together, and, you know, the blogger doesn't have to be worried about this, worried about that. They can actually worry about putting out great content, being part of a network, and getting paid by the blog network themselves. Other than that, I don't know if the individual blogger can do it anymore.
But don't you think that's a good thing, though? You know, you kind of – the biggest issue that most bloggers have right now is trying to rise above the noise. And I think that rewarding those that figure out a way to rise above the noise with ad revenue makes sense to me. And if you can't find a way to rise above the noise, if you join a blog network and make revenue that way, you've either way, you've made yourself a success. You know, the people in the noise, well, that's pretty much with any and all different industries, especially in media, be it newspapers or whatever, you know. There's always, you know, the background noise or the people that don't become a success in the industry. And I think that's a good thing. I think that there should be some kind of competition. I think that becoming a full-time blogger or getting into the blog network or building up your blog to enough where it pays your full-time salary should be a difficult thing. It shouldn't be an easy overnight success thing. You know, there's a huge reward in putting in so much effort to try to build a brand and being able to see that turn into revenue for you. There's a huge value in publishing your content on a blog network site and having people enjoy it and interact with it and comment on it. So I think that's the way it should be. I think it's a good thing that, you know, not everyone is successful in blogging. I think it's good that, you know, only the people that are different and interesting or have a unique opinion on things really kind of rise to that level. And I think that it's great that there's blog networks for bloggers who have an amazing writing talent but can't necessarily learn to monetize or learn to promote their article especially. I think the industry actually is really stable in that respect, and I think it's really great that it's set up that way.
Now, when I sit back and I think of blogging networks and bloggers, individuals, it kind of reminds me of something like Major League Baseball or corporations where more like Major League Baseball, and I'll try and make this analogy make sense, but you have your – in Major League Baseball, you have your farm, a team as a farm system, generally some individuals in there. And then if some of those individuals are doing really well – no, maybe in AAA or Buffalo or whatever, then the bigger teams will look at them and bring them on up and make them be part of the team. And I kind of think that's sort of what's going on here in the blogosphere. You've got your individual bloggers. Some of them are doing great on their own, but it doesn't seem like they'll be able to reach that next level, that next plateau, unless, you know, the blogging networks out there are kind of going out and scouting for these new bloggers to join their network, looking for people who are really good in whatever niche that they're looking to have join their network. And
right.
It seems to me like it might get to a point where you have a bunch of different blogging networks kind of competing against each other head-to-head. It's this giant big networking war going on. I mean, is that pretty much, do you think, is going to end up happening? Or?
Oh, it's already happening. It's already happening, and it's been happening for a long time. It just hasn't really been a front-page story anytime recently. You know, you had the Gawker versus Weblogs Inc. stuff. They were starting blogs in the exact same verticals and then competing for the same advertisers. And they were getting right vicious about it at some points during that whole process. And I think it's definitely going to happen more and more as the industry gets crowded. And I can understand a little more about what you mean by getting to the next level. And what I'll say about that is, big brands, big advertisers, the guys that are going to make you a lot of money, they really are only ever going to trust a bigger business. The individual is scary to invest in, and I think pretty much anyone can understand that because, you know, if I was like Apple or some big company like that and I was going to invest on a blog, I would want there to be a real sustainable business with a lot of different people involved. because that feels a lot safer than, you know, giving Joe Schmo $1,000 to advertise on their blog, and then, oh, they have hosting problems for 29 days out of 30. You know, I can see how that would worry different companies, and I can see how that's going to become a bigger issue. But I think there's always going to be companies who will look out for the smaller ones and for the people on their own. But I think you're right. Getting to the next level usually requires more people. And just like with Read, Write, Web and TechCrunch, when you get to that point, your choice is either to join a blog network or build one of your own. And for the most part, big established blogs just, you know, they go ahead and build more big established blogs. So.
All right. Well, I think we pretty much covered that topic pretty well. I mean, that's something I'm pretty interested in, and I wanted to bring you on and talk to you about that because of your experiences. And I figured you would be the one that has more knowledge of that than anybody else I've had on the show so far. So I'm looking forward to see what happens with all of the various blogging networks and how they come about. But what has been some of your worst experiences with WordPress, and then maybe you can highlight some of the best?
Well, if Charles Strickland is still listening, he's probably laughing his butt off right now because he knows I'm going to say is my worst. My worst has always been the upgrade cycle. WordPress is always releasing a new update. And when I was working for Blogging Network, I was in charge of making sure the blogs were up to date. And we were running upwards of between 40 and 60 blogs. And upgrading all of those installations of WordPress to the latest version and then 3 weeks later seeing that there's a new version out, I used to get chest pains. I was like, oh, I can't believe they just did that to me again. I hate WordPress so much, and it really made me bitter for a while. Luckily, we were able to change the server to use a subversion system, and upgrading went from being like an eight-day thing to an eight-minute thing, but that upgrade cycle, even just on my personal blogs and whatnot, still, it absolutely drives me nuts.
Let's straighten something out here. I mean, in terms of the blogging network, what was it made up? I know you guys were using WordPress, SplashPress, and Blogging Network. I believe they were all using WordPress. So were you guys all using separate self-hosted installation of WordPress for each website, or did you guys end up using WordPress MU?
We've always used the separate installations, and the simple reason for that is back when Blogging Network first began, first of all, we acquired a bunch of different sites, so they came with their own installs in the first place, and second, the WordPress MU was nowhere near as mature as it is today, and it had issues with even the simplest things, especially the plugin architecture and whatnot, and so it just wasn't even worth attempting. And actually, we did later on try it once to migrate all of our sites over, and we just didn't have the expertise, and we didn't know anyone that did, and we weren't really looking all that hard, to be honest. So we just always kept the separate installs. It worked the best. It allowed us to control things and fine-tune things in a way that we didn't feel WordPress MU would allow us to do at the time.
Right. I've had other people that have that I've talked with behind the scenes that just say that, you know, individual WordPress installations are, you know, you would think they wouldn't be, but they've told me that they're easier to manage. And I guess there's less of a chance of breaking the entire network as you might have the chance of doing with WordPress MU than you would of just breaking an individual site on the network. So I guess there's that benefit to it as well, as far as using separate WordPress installations versus MU.
Well, there was also the testing benefit as well. When new plugins came out, we had a test blog set aside, and it would always be like the latest version of WordPress. It would always use the latest version of plugins, and it allowed us to try to break things. And to replicate that with WordPress MU might have been a little awkward. So,
well, maybe you can answer this question for me, because I've been looking for somebody to write a post about it, but they haven't yet. And I want to know, what is the benefits or drawbacks of running WordPress via Subversion versus something that I do where I manually do the upgrading process? What are the benefits and maybe the pros and cons of using Subversion versus a standalone version where if a new update comes out, I have to manually download the files and upload them and do the whole upgrade thing?
Well, for us, there was the pros were twofold. One, it allowed us to create our own version of WordPress, basically, that had the plugins in the right folders, the themes in the right folders, everything ready to go. And through like a DOS-like interface, through a DOS-like interface, we could add a new blog with just one line. So that was really nifty. It also allowed us to upgrade blogs really quickly. So again, from like the DOS-based interface, I set up a shell script, and I just had to run that shell script, and all of the blogs were updated right from automatic servers, nice and quick. I didn't have to do anything on my own side, like on my own end, other than log in. And if it was a major version, of course, you had to go through the upgrade screen on the website. But it was so quick, it was so easy, so painless, and 99 times out of 100, we had absolutely no issues at all. Doing it manually, unfortunately, for some reason, we always had one issue or another, depending on the site. Forever Geek was specifically one of the ones that gave us the most issues because it was transitioned over from a movable type install to WordPress, and it seemed to hate getting upgraded for some reason. It would just go down and start shooting out errors left, right, and center, and we never ever really figured out why it was so finicky, but it is. And we just kind of have learned to accept it, and we never had issues upgrading it through Subversion. So we were very, very happy with that. And unfortunately, Subversion didn't kill the little demons inside Forever Geek, because when we moved it over to Splashburst Media, they don't use Subversion. And when they upgraded it manually through deleting all the old files and uploading new ones, again, it broke and we had to roll it back with a restore from an older image that we took of the site. So we never figured out what's going on with it, and it still has weird issues when it's upgraded manually. I guess the other thing, of course, is just the amount of focus, the amount of time, the amount of energy. I think it doesn't really matter so much when you're just working on one blog. You don't need Subversion for one blog. It's just extra overhead. Get like the instant upgrade plugins that are out there for WordPress, or update it through FTP or through Fantastico or one of those other easier ways. Setting up Subversion was kind of a pain in the butt, and learning the difference between trunk and the stable versions and how to pull the different versions when you want them was kind of frustrating at first. There's definitely a learning curve to using Subversion. So you have to do what's easiest for yourself. And for us, for updating 60 blogs, it just made sense to type in one command, press enter, and just watch the screen go nuts, And, at the end, there's an error report. Only one out of 60 blogs had a problem. Great. I couldn't have been happier with it.
Well, I've got one more question I wanted to ask you, and then I'm going to start asking questions that are being asked by our readers here in the listeners. Here in the chat room and talk show, we've got a number of them here today. So, David, you're a pretty popular guy. Maybe. But managing a network of blogs and each one of them being a separate installation of WordPress, was there ever a standard set of plugins that would be installed on each version or each separate install of WordPress where, the blog networking manager would come in and install certain plugins, or was it entirely up to the that blog author as to what they could have? You kind of just gave them free range. I mean, what was the administration factor as far as how much control did the individual blog authors have of the blogs that were inside the network?
We had a stable of about half a dozen to a dozen plugins that we made sure to install with every WordPress install.
You gotta name them?
Silly things. Akismet was one of the big ones, of course. For a long time, we were using, I can't remember what the tagging software was anymore. It's been so long. Fuzzy.
Maybe it was Post. Ultimate Tag Warrior.
Yeah, Ultimate Tag Warrior. We had, most commented, exec PHP. Recent comments, recent posts, related posts, Spam Karma 2 for a long time was one of our must-haves. WP Contact Form 3, which was like just a simple drop-in contact form, which we added on all of them. For a while, we also used the WP Most Commented Posts by Lester Gamers Chan, who's done tons and tons of plugins.
Oh, yeah, I love his work. What about caching plugins? Did you mention that already?
No, and we didn't use cache, like any kind of caching plugins on almost all of our blogs. We had about three or four different plugins that we did dependent on the site. WP Cache, of course, was if the site was getting a lot of traffic, we'd throw that on there. But to be honest, we never had issues with, you know, downtime or server loads or anything like that. Pretty much every blog network that I've worked with has really worked hard on making sure to optimize the servers for PHP, for dynamically loading pages. We usually have a separate MySQL server to make things better there that's just optimized for serving SQL queries. So it never really became an issue. Like we were like Forever Geek was on the front page of Dig like three or four times in 1 month, and I think the outage was like 12 minutes total. So we didn't really need caching.
So that seems to me like you would sort of fall in line with Matt Mullenweg's response when I asked him, why isn't there a built-in issue with caching? I mean, we see all of these WordPress blogs that sometimes get onto the front page of Dig, and what do we end up seeing? A big, giant database error message because the site goes down, and then WordPress gets the blame for it. And a lot of people are so big on using WP Cache or Supercache, but according to Matt, he's told me that the cache plugins are only there to get around bad server configurations. Apparently, right. He's had experiences where he's gone in and worked with the web host, and they've changed a couple of things with the server config, and then everything was fine. I mean, would you kind of agree with his logic that WordPress really doesn't need to be cached? It really just needs to be on a web server that's configured the proper way?
I would agree with him to a point. I think that WordPress does still have some built-in scalability issues. I think that they could fine-tune things just a little bit more to kind of save the mid-range web hosts from having that kind of issue. I guess the biggest issue really isn't WordPress itself. It's the plugin architecture that WordPress uses. So many plugins do a SQL query every time they load a page, and that's what's killing people. You know, you have Gravatars and Lightbox and Most Commented and Recent Commented and all these other things. And unfortunately, every time you load the page, they go and check again, okay, well, what was recently commented or what's the most commented post or what's the related post to this post and the whole nine yards. And that's what eats away at your server. That's what creates that high load. You have a whole Dig user base coming, and all these plugins are adding on to the amount of load that WordPress normally uses. WordPress by itself, again, it could use a little more fine-tuning maybe, but for the most part, I'd agree with Matt that, scalability isn't an issue with just WordPress itself.
Okay, then. I'm going to start asking a couple of reader questions. I keep saying reader. I meant listener questions. I got this.
You're too used
room.
To writing now.
Yeah, I'm reading their questions, but I'm just tongue-tied tonight. But WP Candy, otherwise known as Michael Castilla, he wants to know, how is it like working in a blogging network such as, well, you don't work for Splash Press Media anymore, so how was it like working in a blogging network environment?
There are pros and cons, and I've written about it many, 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 many times on XFEP, which is kind of my blogging-related blog. It's my personal mind dump of what I think of all this stuff. I guess for me there was more pros and cons because it gave me a stable income. But the biggest issue with working with a blog network is finding one that kind of fits your style. And I'm in a really fortunate position because I've worked with two different ones. I can kind of compare them for you. Blogging Network was very, very fast moving, very small, very personal. You knew everyone in the company. You knew what was going on. You knew what was coming down the pipe. You knew everything. And you had this kind of overview that made you feel very, very comfortable. But also it felt very small, it felt very fragile, it felt like it could spin apart at any second. With Splash Press Media, it's such a big, big company. There's so many people, you don't get to learn everyone's names, you don't have access to everything, everything's locked down very tightly, and they have a server administrator, and that's pretty much the only person that has access to the server. They have all these different staff that have these very specific roles, and you never feel like you're getting the full picture, but it's a big company, so you feel very safe and protected, and there's no chance that it's going to go under tomorrow, and it's definitely a very different feel, and everything's so slow moving. Oh, well, we want to get this new software up and running. Okay, well, it's got to go through an approval process and a testing process and a management process and a server analysis and oh, the whole nine yards. And it's just two very, very different feelings. It's pretty much like working with any corporate company. You know, it's Blogging Network was kind of like the startup atmosphere, and SplashPress was very much like a very corporate structure. So yeah, I don't know if you want me going into any more detail, but those are the main things that I noticed from those two. I guess I'll also mention the negative sides. The negative things is that you're working for someone else, and that kind of defeats some of the purpose in blogging, I guess, for me. Also, you don't have control over your content. You don't have control over your advertising. You don't have control over the messages that are put around your content. You don't have control over how the site looks, what plugins are installed. You definitely feel like you're just a content producer rather than a blogger. And I think there's a distinction there that a blogger usually manages their whole site and that a content producer just kind of, you know, produces content, writes articles. So I didn't feel like I was a blogger at SplashPress because I didn't have any of that extra control. Where at Blogging Network, because it was a smaller company, everyone had to have a million different talents to make that place continue to run. And so I had that kind of control, and I felt more like a blogger there, if you get what I mean.
Right. I mean, if I were to join a Blogging Network, I think the biggest hurdle I would have to get over is accepting the fact that the content would not be mine. And it's the same thing in regards to guest blogging or guest writing on other people's blogs. You write these articles that you think are really good, and they are, and it's a constant battle of, well, do I put it on their site or do I put it on my site? And I would just have to get over that hurdle of, well, I'm writing these awesome articles and they're going on their site and they're getting the credit for them, and you know, it's the content's not mine. It's not like I can go back later and use it somewhere else, because it's not how it works.
Right, and it becomes really hard because you kind of build up a relationship with the post that you write, especially your best work, like what I call the pillar articles. You spend all this creative time and energy and effort on it, perfecting the article and picking the right image and the whole nine yards, and then you look at it and go, but I don't want to give it to them. I know there's money involved, and I know I'm going to get paid for this, but you know, I'm only going to get paid for this once. And then after that, even if it's a lot of money, I get nothing.
Yeah, so Patad Dunbar, he wants to know, how much time per week or day do you dedicate towards writing? And alongside that question, Nathan Rice wants to know, what are some good desktop publishing programs, either for Mac and Windows, either for Mac or either for Windows or both?
So how many hours per day? Well, when I started, I was working for Blogging Network, and I was working between 12 and 16 hours a day. and pretty much every couple of months, I tried to reduce that by an hour. But even my last few weeks at SplashPress Media, I was working between 8 and 12-hour days. I haven't taken a vacation in 3 years, longer than 2 days.
You know what? You sound like the perfect poster child for that New York Times article where bloggers are supposedly dying because they were just sitting there blogging and having heart attacks.
You know what, though? One of the things that I really didn't understand about that article is that it doesn't mention the passion that goes into blogging. If you didn't want to blog for that long, you wouldn't, right? I think the only reason I've been able to work so long for so many years is because I love
what I do. Because you
enjoy
doing it.
Yeah, it's so great. Sometimes I think to myself, why would anyone want to do any other job? Because it's so much fun. When at the end of the day, you look at the articles that you've created and the responses to them and the community that you're building, there's just no other feeling like it. And, you know, there's a little bit of a buzz attached to that sometimes, especially when you get a really good article and it's like being picked up everywhere and linked to, and it's like, haha, I created that. And look at all the response I'm getting. And it's really energizing and invigorating. And usually, if you're blogging, you're usually blogging about your passions and your hobbies. And so it just makes sense to pour that time and energy into it. And I don't see, you know, I don't see why they left that out of that article, to be honest.
And Nathan Rice's question, some good desktop publishing programs, Mac and Windows.
Yeah. I almost want to skip that question because I think people are going to laugh at me. I've I've written over 10,000 posts, and 9,900 of them probably have been in the WordPress administration panel. Me too.
I'm not going to laugh at you because I write my posts in the WordPress Write panel.
Yeah, and I do too, and I pretty much always have. I'm very much opposed to installing extra software on my desktop that I don't need. If WordPress is going to build an administration panel, I might as well use it. If they didn't want me to use it, they wouldn't have built it. And I've kind of built a workflow around that. It kind of seems silly for me to change now. Whenever I'm publishing and I'm not connected to the internet, I actually use a program called Smultron on my Mac, which is a free text editor, mostly for programming. It has no ability to publish posts or, you know, add categories or any of those things like most of those desktop blogging tools have. And then I just copy and paste it into the WordPress Write page when I have internet again. And, you know, on my Windows box, I use Crimson Editor, which is another coding application, because really my background is from web development and, you know, coding and stuff like that. So for me, it just seems weird to use all these strange applications and install 50 million of them and deal with the issues. I can just log into my WordPress install and go to the right panel and publish a post. It also solves the issue of confusion. I used Windows Live Writer for a while. I had it set up on multiple blogs, and I published 16 posts on the wrong blog, and I felt like an idiot because I didn't really realize it until the next day.
Oh, boy, that must have been funny.
Yeah,
well,
and it was over 3 days.
You.
It was over 3 days, and I didn't even notice I was doing it, right? I just had it selected wrong, and I didn't know, and here I am, I'm publishing all these posts, and no one ever told me it was on the wrong one, and I didn't know. And so you have, like, these posts about blogging on a technology site, and everyone's going, what the heck is going on? So, yeah, I don't know. Save the confusion. Just log into WordPress and publish through there. It's nice and easy. It's, you know, I don't know. I love it. I don't think I need anything else.
Have you before WordPress 2.5, it came with 2.3 and versions earlier. I don't know when it was created, but have you ever used the WordPress publishing bookmarklet before?
Nope, not even once. And it's been around for a long time. I think it's actually been around since like version 1.5, maybe.
But there's a post in the dashboard right now, and Matt's kind of asking, I don't know if you've read that post or not, but he's kind of asking questions as far as what do people love the most in terms of if they were going to, like, revamp the WordPress publishing bookmarklet. And as far as I can tell, and I'm in this camp, I would love to see them come up with a bookmarklet that was very similar to the way the Tumblr publishing bookmarklet works. Because it was very fast to load. It had support for all different kinds of media right off the bat. And I would just love to see that kind of functionality added to the bookmarklet. So that way, if I come across a video, I can maybe highlight the embed text. I push the bookmarklet button, and boom, all I have to do is type a couple things in there and publish it right to my blog. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Right, and I can understand why a lot of people would like that and use that. And one of the ones that I actually tried at one point back when it was owned by Performancing, I think, the now Scribefire tool, which is an extension of Mozilla Firefox that allows you to quickly kind of blog as well. They released a new version actually on May 1st, Scribefire 2.1, and they added MySpace support, Tumblr support, categories are now available for blogger blogs and stuff like that. I don't know. I can see why people would want to use those types of things, and I can see that it might help with their blogging, but it kind of makes me worried that we're just going to see more of the echo chamber, right? Like, the only time you're going to be using this is when you see content on someone else's site that you want to talk about. And
yeah.
I think the blogging industry already is too much of an echo chamber, and I think this kind of software only makes that worse. I think that people should move away from the site, digest what they read, and then write the post.
Okay. All right. I can see where you're coming from in regards to that. Charles Strickland wants to know, what is the square root of 145? That's exactly what I thought of when he asked that question. So we're just kind of ignore that because I think he's trying to sabotage my show. I'm just kidding, Charles. Come on now. But he did ask a question. Will you be involved in WordCamp Toronto?
I hadn't really thought about that yet. A lot of the details still haven't really been published out there last time I checked. Now that he mentions it, I almost want to do it, but I know for a fact that I'm not the kind of person that could necessarily really organize such a thing. I would love to speak at it and talk about this kind of stuff, but I'm not an organizer. I'm, you know, even with Grand Effect, a blog network that I'm like the co-founder of, Sarah Perez has been kind of the leader, and I've been kind of the code monkey, and I've always kind of taken that assistant role to the real leadership types. I might contact them to see if I can help them out, because I would definitely want it to be as successful as possible, but I definitely don't see myself trying to take a very big role in any of that.
Well,
I guess the question goes back to you, Jeffro.
No, I'm just reading some of the questions that Charles put out here, and it's wow. But I'm not gonna read them. I'm just gonna ask you: did you happen to catch last week's episode of WordPress Weekly when I had Nathan Race on, and we talked all kinds of different things regarding themes?
Yeah, I was on pretty much the whole time. I actually ran out of Skype credits near the end, and I emailed you to let you know because I was like, I was really looking forward to actually talking to him and asking him a few questions. So I was like, no, not now. And I was like, oh, I can't be bothered to go and top it up or anything. So I made sure for this week.
The reason I was asking was because I know you yourself, you've been involved in the WordPress theming community for quite some time, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you told me you've worked with over 100 different themes. Have you released 100 different themes, or have you just worked and modified 100 different themes? And
I've worked with 100 different themes. I've released in total probably about a dozen myself.
And I think we all know that the one theme you use for bloggingpro.com, that is a very popular theme.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen a lot of people using that. But Nathan Rice, you know what? I'm going to do this really quick. Nathan, are you there? Are you on the air?
Yeah, I'm here.
And, well, right here we have David Peralti on. And, David, if you have any questions that you can remember you want to ask him from last week, be my guest. You can ask him a couple, and then we'll move on. And, David, you can give us a lowdown as to the big news. And we'll close out the show. So, Nathan, go ahead.
Me, go ahead?
Yeah, sure. That's the other way around. David, you go ahead.
All right. I listened to most of last week's show, and I don't know if you guys touched on this or not, but I guess my biggest question was why spend the time and the energy on building, like, you're part of iThemes, right? You're like the...
Yeah.
Yeah, you're like the second guy on that, I think. Or how many of you work together on iThemes currently?
Currently, it's just the two of us.
Okay. Why build a company around building themes for WordPress? Why isn't that just the tip of the iceberg rather than the whole thing? You know, WordPress is great software, but there's so many other different things out there that you could be spending your time and energy on that would probably make you more money. I know a friend of mine, Chris Garrett, who runs the 449.com, you know, he doesn't pay his bills off of WordPress themes. WordPress themes are great and fun and all, but building a whole business around it, to me, that just doesn't make long-term sense.
It doesn't if your long-term goal is to just build WordPress themes, but if you've got other things that you want to do, but the WordPress themes is sort of the foot in the door for I guess that the biggest people we would take an example from would be a company like 37 Signals, who started off, if I'm not mistaken, as web developers, and then turned their company into a company for web developers. And so it's sort of just like the first step of many, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
And one of the things that I also wanted to ask is, you guys do custom themes as well, correct?
At the moment, no.
No?
Yes and no. I mean, we do because, like personally, but the company itself, we sort of, I guess it's the general rule that we're using is if we have time for it, we'll take it. But if not, then we're going to focus on just developing new themes for the store.
Okay. And I've always been able to understand why custom themes are worth their money. It's just like any other custom web development. But how do you feel knowing that X amount of people are buying the same theme from you for, you know, $30 or $50 or whatever over and over and over again? I always thought that was kind of I understand free themes because usually there's promotion involved and usually it gives you links and search engine optimization, the whole nine yards. And I can understand paying, you know, $500 for a WordPress theme or more, but I never could get my mind around building a theme once and why the market would be willing to continue to buy a non-unique theme over and over and over again. You know, people will bring up support just like you did in the podcast, but, you know, how much support do 99% of the people that buy a theme really need? You know, are they really getting value from what they're buying?
They are. The one of the reasons why I think that premium themes initially were so popular was because of the fact that they did cost money, which reduced the number of total users for that particular theme. And a couple of tweaks, you know, you change a color here, you move a column there, and you've got a not a unique theme, but a semi-unique theme that looks, you know, it differentiates you for the most part from say, for instance, you know, the people who use the Blogging Pro theme. Well, it looks just like the Blogging Pro website. And so because of mass distribution of free themes, you can run into, you know, what I call the, you know, the cut line effect, where everybody and their brother uses cut line.
Which is a theme I actually have been supporting and releasing new versions for the last half a year, by the way.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Brian Gardner, he did the, he managed cut line for a little while.
Yep.
And it's a great theme, but like I have no problems with cut line, but the problem is it's so overused. And so people are looking for something of a similar quality to Cutline that they're maybe, you know, not sharing with hundreds of thousands of other bloggers.
And so you think they're getting value out of their purchase for sure then?
I do, mainly because a lot of free theme developers aren't offering extended support. And number two, some do, but most don't. And number two, they are getting, they're using a theme that's not as used as a lot of the really popular, you know, free themes. I think they're getting their value. I think that they're also, you got to keep in mind too, that a lot of the people who release free WordPress themes are both the designer and the developer. And so, and I'm not trying to say one way or the other, but a lot of times, great designers aren't good developers, and vice versa. And so, when you
99% of the time, yeah,
exactly. And so, what we've done is we've split that up. We've got really good designers, and then we've got me. And I'm not gonna say I think I'm a pretty good developer, but we're splitting it up to where the code is great, but also at the same time, the design is very pretty too. And so, I think that you're getting something of a higher value, of a higher quality than you would from a free theme developer, at least in the current market.
And you would agree with that, even if I said something along the lines of, you know, Chris Pearson, who's done some amazing themes, including creating the original Cutline. You know, this is someone who really understands typography, line spacing, cascading style sheets, and he considers all of his themes as a basis for people to build upon. And you know, just because they're not building upon it, like Cutline, doesn't mean necessarily that it's a bad theme or that it's a bad design, or, you know what I mean? Like, there are people out there. I guess the question is, are your themes as much as a basis for people to build on, or do all of the people that use your theme pretty much use it as is as well?
They are using it as is, but the idea is that we're integrating as much customization customizability, if that's even a word, into the theme without having our target audience personally at iThemes is businesses, not necessarily even bloggers. In fact, if you look at most of our themes, they're targeted, I mean, very, very squarely at businesses or business owners. And the reason we're doing that is because we believe that's an unfilled niche currently. And so when you look at that market, they're going to be less prone to want to do any code editing or do any photo editing for that matter. And so what we do is we try to release multiple color schemes for every theme we release, and also we integrate things like the custom image header script to make sure that they can upload a header themselves. We widgetize as much as humanly possible so that they can edit everything from their dashboard.
This is really my last question on that. I'm sorry to cut you off.
Okay.
But,
make this your last one, buddy.
Yep. sorry. And my last question, though, then is, isn't that counterproductive to your business? In order to make money yourself, wouldn't it be better to limit the amount of value in the theme for businesses? That way they're more likely to sign up for the 3-hour modification package for $250?
No, because support for us, we're looking at that may be true, like down the line, but we're not looking at it from necessarily a, you know, we're going to give them a good product but slightly inferior so that they have to pay for support. That might be the business model for some people. For us, it's we want to maximize the volume of sales. And so we can, you know, so we can get out of a lot of the support. We don't mind doing support when it's needed, but we don't like doing unnecessary support. So we're not going to build in, you know, bugs or inferior features or whatever in order to make money. That's sort of a Microsoft type of thing. You know what I mean?
Hey, it worked for them, right?
It did, but you know, that's sort of, you know, we everything sort of works with Google, you know, for the most part, and so we're sort of following that. You know, we're trying to follow, you know, that don't be evil, don't do stuff just to make money. You know, customers do count, so they're paying money up front, so don't screw them if you can help it.
That's great. Did you have a question for me as well?
I did back then. I asked it already. So you're not you don't use any desktop publishing at all. The only thing my issue was that the right panel is really slow, and so because of all the JavaScript that has to be loaded, I used Flock for a while, and they had a desktop publishing from it, and it was pretty cool. But I guess my question to you would be this. Would there be any value in doing – you've heard of Woopra, right?
Yes, I have.
Okay. You know, Woopra doesn't have a web client. It's a desktop client only. I was thinking maybe would there be value in WordPress developing a desktop management, you know, program?
I guess – the biggest issue with anything that comes out from anyone other than Automattic, of course, will always be the fact that sooner or later it's going to be missing a feature that you really want. For the longest time, you know, a lot of the different software didn't have support for WordPress tags. I know it's a relatively new feature, but now I got to go into the admin to add tags, and I'm tagging my articles, and you can't stop me. So why didn't you support tags really quickly? They're always going to be missing a feature sooner or later. I can understand what you mean with the JavaScript issue. It would be nice to kind of have a lighter weight thing, but usually when I'm doing my blogging, I just, you know, I'm so used to tab-based browsing that I'll just throw the right screen on another tab while I'm reading over one more article or answering one more email, so I don't really notice the load issues at all.
Yeah.
I'm a lazy blogger in that respect.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And if we're going the direction of, you know, I mentioned Google a second ago. They're moving all their apps to online, so I guess that is the future. But I think WordPress probably needs to streamline that a bit. Can I ask you one more question?
Maybe.
Can I, Jeff?
Yes, Yes, okay. You can. Since you are so, I'm so loving to my listeners, my thankful listeners. So,
okay.
Hey, you know, let me tell you the truth. One of the reasons why I do this show is because I'm providing an avenue. I'm getting these guests like David Peralta and other people on the show that are, you know, are sort of big names in the WordPress community, or they're doing things with WordPress that is kind of unique. And, you know, this show that I'm doing here is one of the only platforms available. You know, I'm providing a way for people to come on the show and ask these questions almost face-to-face with the people that are making the difference. So, you know, just be my guest. Go ahead and ask them another question.
Okay, last one. I'll shut up. In the themes market currently, or, you know, paid plugins, if that's a potential market too, what is it that you're seeing that's missing, and what are you seeing that we're doing well?
I'm going to echo a lot of other people with what's missing, what I know is missing is a WYSIWYG theme editor that incorporates some of what they've been trying to do with widgets and some of what they've been trying to do with custom header and go that next step. Like really allow me to easily and quickly edit the design. If I want to move my comments link just below my post title, I shouldn't have to go and edit the theme text. And at the same time, I don't want it done in such a way that it's so ridiculously unfriendly to users that I have to read a 20-page manual before I can properly edit the theme the way that I want it. Some kind of visual interface where I can move elements around, maybe even just like colored boxes that signify various things, and allow me to drop in widgets and customize the header easily and quickly. I think the presentation aspect of WordPress themes really need to be beefed up. As for something like plugins and stuff like that, I really haven't noticed anything missing. I guess, you know, it's funny because every time I think there's something missing for WordPress plugins, I just go search extend and it's usually there. I guess the biggest issue that I've always had in a blog network setting, of course, is managing users. And despite people trying to make plugins to deal with roles and that kind of situation better, I think that WordPress still needs to work on multiple user management better. I'll give you an easy example. We had it set up that, only certain users could see a site because we wanted it to be we wanted to take it down for most people, but only show it to registered administrators of the site because we were editing the theme and we didn't want the general public to see, or even the editors or authors, because, you know, while we brought them on and we trust them to write, we don't necessarily trust them implicitly. They could break the news before we get to, and that's never a good thing. So there was a plugin that we tried that allowed us to make it so only logged in users could see the site, but it didn't have an option to allow us to only show the administrators. I don't think there's enough role control. I think that needs a lot more fine tuning for blog networks. I think that'd be huge. Better integrated stats than what Automattic is giving, I think, would be another big thing. We used to have a lot of great stats programs before they decided to switch Mint into a paid program. I can't even remember the free name of it anymore, but it was amazing. I miss it. I wish there was more good stats programs for WordPress, like integrated into WordPress, not outside of WordPress. I don't want to have to log in anything else. I want it in my dashboard, dang it. My dashboard, I want to give it use, like some useful information. I think real statistic information on bounce rate and hits and that kind of information would be very useful, especially presented correctly.
Well, with that being said, I'm going to step in and I'm going to wave my magic stick, but I want to thank Nathan Rice for stopping by the show and calling in, and I want to thank him again for being part of the show last week. But we're going to get around to closing out the show here so we can all crack open a beer and start the WordCamp Jeff Rowe after show. That rhymes. When I started the show, I said you were formerly working for Splash Press Media and formerly writing for bloggingpro.com, but that's no longer the case. So why don't you tell us what's going on, what happened, and what's going to be happening for you in the future?
Right. My departure from Splash Press is really just because I like I said, it's a big company, and I really wasn't used to kind of that environment. I really like the startup feel of a small, agile company able to make quick changes and kind of flow with the market. And so about a month and a half ago, I started looking around, seeing if there was, you know, any other positions that I could really fill. And I talked to a few different companies, including some blog networks. And, you know, what ended up happening was through Darren Rouse's job board, I found an opportunity for a company called PicApp. And PicApp is a product of a company called PicScout from Israel. And PicApp allows you to embed images from Corbis or Getty, both editorial and creative images, that would usually cost you a lot of money to get access to for free into your blog. And the way that they do this is they allow you to embed a flash player that when you hover over the picture, it shows an advertisement. And that advertisement's used to pay for the site, as well as pay money towards the photographer or Getty or Corbis. And in the future, they're also hoping, but don't quote me on this, to also be able to provide a small percentage back to the image publisher. So if you find an image of Lindsay Lohan doing something stupid on PicApp, embedded on your blog, and it gets millions of hits and generates thousands of dollars of revenue, well, hopefully we'll eventually be able to pay a percentage of that back to the publisher that put it on their high-traffic site. If you haven't been to PicApp already, check it out. I'm now their community manager. So what that means or what that entails is I will be the communication arm connecting PicApp, which is the service, to bloggers in general. We're working really hard with B5 Media and some other companies to basically show them the benefits of using PicApp over illegally using images from the Google image search that you have no ability to use or no rights to use. And PicApp's parent company, PicScout's, original business objective actually was to deal with copyright infringement of images. And they've been protecting Getty and Corbis and other image companies for years now from what's, in my opinion, a crazy use of all of these images that you're finding on Google image search that don't belong to you. And don't belong to anyone but, you know, Getty and Corbis and all these other image providers. So I think they're providing a great service, and they've decided to take me on. And what this will allow me to do is network with more bloggers, talk about the service, and hopefully go to more conferences as well. So people are going to see a lot more of me, even if they don't want to.
That could be good and that could be bad, but Charles Strickland has called in. I see he's pushed the request to talk button, so let's see what he has to say. Oh, hold on a second. Did that just... Well, I don't know what happened there, but Charles, you're on the air with... what's his name? Not David Peralti. Oh, boy. I'm the only one that can get away with that, but Charles, how are you doing tonight? Charles?
Are you sure you unmuted him?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Let me try it again. Charles, are you there? That's interesting. I thought I heard him, and he is unmuted. So, I'll leave him unmuted, and if you come back, or maybe he spilled pop all over his Alienware laptop. I had a couple questions from Ed Sutherland about your departure from Blogging Pro and Splash Press, but I'm just going to read them really quick here because I think you'll be able to answer all three of them in one answer. But he wanted to know, how much notice did you have of your departure? Why didn't David give any readers a head-up of his departure rather than a note by a Splash Press editor? And three, do you believe that your departure is related to the replacement of the editor at Blog Herald?
It has nothing to do with Blog Herald whatsoever. It's just coincidence that we're kind of leaving around the same time. As for why I didn't go ahead and mention it, I kind of feel it's tacky when bloggers, you know, that are writing for a blog network go ahead and announce their departure to try to get a bunch of people to follow them where they go next. I really didn't want to affect Splash Press's business in any negative way whatsoever. I thought it would be wise for me to make a quiet exit and kind of let the Splash Press team, you know, fill the voids however they saw fit. I was actually kind of surprised that they published that post because I'm not going to say I have any huge following or anything, but it might actually be detrimental to their business to kind of publish such things, because in my experience, when a blogger leaves pretty much the blog that they're known for blogging on, it leads to a drop in traffic and subscribers, and I didn't want to do that to them because they had been so great to me and they had been so helpful. And when I decided that I was going to leave, and when I found out that I was definitely going to get the position at PicApp, I gave Splashfest Media a good 2 weeks' notice. I wanted to leave on the best terms possible. I hope to still do some stuff with them and for them. And, you know, they've been really, really supportive about the whole thing, and I'm really excited. Another reason that I want to bring up for leaving kind of has to do with the way Splashpress has marketed their sites. I don't know if you know this, but Splashpress has about nearly a dozen blogs related to blogging. And when you get that many sites, especially like they have a fair number of big ones, right? They have 901AM, they have performancing.com, they have the Blog Herald, they have Blogging Pro. You bring all these sites together with all these different writers, and you know, it almost felt like it was getting kind of hard to compete with the company that I was working for. You know,
yeah, it ended up being one giant Blogging Pro, if you think about it.
Well, and Blog Herald is really kind of the key blog there, and it's got
like
a
Blog
dozen
Herald.
Writers. And it's got a dozen writers. So there's a dozen writers over there, including me, publishing posts every once in a while. And then there's Blogging Pro with just me. And it, you know, I really wanted to add, like I asked for Blogging Pro to be kind of the only source of WordPress news, because that's really what I know the best. And unfortunately, I was told in no uncertain aspect that, you know, that wasn't going to happen, that the Blog Herald has always covered, you know, software as well. You know, there's the WordPress Wednesdays, which is amazing, and I don't want to take anything away from that, that's for sure. But there was getting to be a lot of other posts other than the WordPress Wednesdays that were relating to WordPress, and I was really feeling the crunch, because how could I, as a single author, keep up with the ability of 12 authors to scoop stories? So
exactly. That almost goes back to my point of the single blogger can't do it anymore, because there's too many stories with their niche. They don't have time. I mean, when a blogger wears many hats, I mean, being the publisher, being the owner, being the technical guy, doing the web hosting, doing the networking, doing the social bookmarking. I mean, when you think of all that, and you're going up against blogging networks where they have teams of people writing on stuff, where a blogger can have an off day because he's got a couple of other people to lean on. You know, like I said, I don't think the individual blogger can do it anymore when they're trying to cover a specific niche and make money from it.
Yeah, and I guess I'm kind of proof of that. And here I am, I'm already working in a blog network. So really, I do have some support in a lot of those other arenas. But, you know, Blogging Pro wasn't my full-time gig. It was just a piece of a larger puzzle. And it just didn't leave me enough time or energy to really give it the time, attention, and devotion it deserved. And a lot of people were noting that fact. You know, I got a few Twitters like, hey, Dave, look at this. And basically some people are writing articles like slamming my ability to report the news on Blogging Pro because I haven't been able to come up with, you know, really creative content on there, because I'm also, you know, administrating the Cutline theme. I'm also running Forever Geek. I'm also blogging on Dev Lounge and also on Blog Herald. And I'm also working on marketing and advertising. And I'm also trying to help with server administration stuff. And, you know, there just wasn't enough energy and time and hours in the day to really give it the effort.
Well, I mean, with all that being said, hey, I just wanted to extend this opportunity to thank you for everything you've done regarding Blogging Pro, because it's been in my RSS feed reader since I've come across it, and you were one of the main sites that were posting news and tidbits of information related to WordPress practically on a daily basis. And I always appreciated you linking to Charles' podcast when he released one, and my podcast whenever I started one. And trust me, I knew when you linked to me, because there was about 10 other spam blogs that sent me pingbacks too. So, hey, I just wanted to thank you on the air for everything you've done. I hope that Blogging Pro perhaps can continue to be WordPress news-centric, but the last time I checked, there was about two or three comments on there, and they're kind of having an open-ended question as far as what do we want to see out of bloggingpro.com. And they already highlighted the issue that there's about 10 other blogs that deal with pro blogging. But other than that, hey, I wish you luck on your ventures, and hey, sometime in the future, maybe you can come back and update us on your progress, or maybe we can talk a little bit more about the business of blogging, because I think that's a really, really cool subject to discuss.
Thank you again for having me, and I really appreciate the chance to let everyone know my news about my new gig as the community manager at PicApp. If you heard it here, then you've heard it first, because I really didn't tell anyone except for the company that I was leaving and a few very close friends and family that I was making this move. So thanks for giving me this platform to let everyone know and to express my opinion on all those great questions you had.
No problem. It's just they're going to have to go through, check this out, they're going to have to go through an hour and a half of material to get to it. But I think it was good material. Other than your job as being community manager at PicApp, is there anything in the works? Do you have any dark shadow projects that you're working on, or are you just strictly dealing with PicApp, and are you going to be doing anything dealing with blogging networks in the future, or is this PicApp your one-time gig?
PicApp will be my primary focus, but you'll definitely see my personal blog about blogging, xstep.com, pick up a lot more information about WordPress releases. It'll probably link to your podcast every week as well as Charles's. It'll pick up a lot of where I left off with Blogging Pro. And, I'm also working on some other side projects like Grand Effect, building up my own kind of Nine Rule style blog community or blog network. And, hopefully that'll be very successful as well. So definitely check this out.
Yeah, before I let you go, what was that blog network called again that I've seen so much press about? It's called something
Grand Effect. Yeah, Grand Effect.
Yeah, Grand Effect. I saw you mention a post about the new design there, and I see you fixed the navigation link colors.
It
looked too dark. But explain to me exactly what that is. I mean, is that a blogging network that you're starting, or are you hoping to manage that? Or it seems like you're always going to have your hands in some blogging network.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like I can escape. Back a little while ago, Sarah Perez, who writes on Read Write Web, sarahintampa.com, and for Microsoft's On10 blog network, mentioned that she would like to start a blog network kind of in the same vein as Nine Rules, where you take established sites and you join them together under one banner to try to use their combined power to leverage advertising deals and marketing and the whole nine yards. Basically going back to what we were talking about before, how it's very hard as a single blogger to kind of make the connections with the big advertising companies because they kind of look down on a single blogger. Well, this will give us the advantage of not being a single blogger anymore. And we have about half a dozen sites in Grand Effect now, and we're looking to add probably about four more. And I'm the co-founder, and Sarah Perez is the other founder, and she's just doing an absolutely amazing job. And like I said, I'm pretty much the code monkey. I did the current design and all the coding for it, except for the XHTML, which a new friend of mine actually saved me and was able to do that. So I owe Andrew McLeod a huge shout out for doing the PSD to XHTML work, because that takes me forever and a day to do. The WordPress theming part, because it's powered by WordPress, of course, took me a couple hours. So I'm definitely happy with the new design, and we're looking, if you know anyone that's technology focused or web 2.0 focused and are looking to join a blog network with their already established blog, they should definitely hit us up, because we're looking for four more people, four more great blogs to feature and to work with.
Wow. Jeffro2.0.com has a page rank of 5, and Blogging Pro only has a page rank of 4. And it used to be 6. I don't know what happened there in that latest update, but holy smokes, some of us nobodies
happened.
Are going up there, let me tell you.
Yeah, don't get me started on that.
Yeah, I mean, just think, when I say nobodies are getting high page ranks, I mean nobodies. I mean, take ronaldfi.com, Ronald's personal website, for example. But anyways... He's muted, so he can't get me back. But hey, David, I wanted to extend my gratitude for you coming on the show, and I'd love to have you on as a guest some other time to go more in depth into the business of blogging and check out
Anytime
some of the other topics.
Anytime you record on a Friday, I'm here. It's just those Saturdays kill me.
Yeah, well, I can't control that because of scheduling conflicts at work. But, hey, thanks for coming on the show, and I wish you all the best.
Thanks again.
And that was David Peralti, formerly of BloggingPro.com. Now he's part of GrandEffect.com and community manager for PicApp. With that being said, that's going to conclude episode 15 of WordPress Weekly. If you have any feedback about this show, you can email me at feedback@jeffro2pt0.com, or you can leave a comment on the blog under the post dedicated to this episode. I don't have any guests scheduled for next week, so we'll just have to see what happens. Just keep an eye on the blog, and I'll keep you guys updated. So until next week, have a good weekend, everybody.